Instacart is on a mission to have you not leave the couch this basketball season. Because between the pregame rituals and the postgame interviews, it can be difficult to find time for everything else. So let Instacart take care of your game day snacks or weekly restocks and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Because we hear it's bad luck to be hungry on game day. So download the Instacart app today and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants. Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
I'll tell you what, Rob King does a nice job with those documentaries.
He really does.
Sportsnet Pittsburgh.
All of it. I mean, it takes you back. They talk to people who have actually seen things, who were there. The video support and the pictures are unbelievable. That's, in order to make it work, that's what you got to have. All of it.
No doubt. We're watching the Nellie Bryles.
Remember him?
Nellie Bryles.
The Rainmaker.
Yes. One of my first sports memories when I was 6 years old or so. Was him falling off the mound in the 71 series, Bob. You remember that?
Yeah. He would throw. He would always do it, and he'd fall chest first down.
Yes. Yeah. That captured my little imagination back then. It's like, what is this? This is fantastic stuff with Willie Stargell, this one, isn't it?
And Larry Boa, I remember him vividly.
They just showed Forbes Field. You said you went there once.
Only once.
I wish I had gone there. That's one venue I wish I had gone to. The clearest sort of picture of what it was came to me by surprise one night when I just ordered the movie, the original Angels in the Outfield. That was filmed largely at Forbes Field. So that gave me an idea of what it was like. Do you have a vivid memory of being in there?
No, I don't. I know we were. I remember just being there and absorbing it all as a young kid, but no specific memories. That's a shame. I wish I would have. I wish I was born a little earlier so I could have done that more.
Ron was
there.
He should have been born when he was born, Bob. I told you about the piece I did on Phil Coyne, the
great usher.
Legendary usher.
Great usher, yeah. You did a really good job through his eyes, what he's seen over all those 100-plus years.
Back in 2013, I met him at a coffee shop in Oakland. And the idea was just to take a walk around the site of Forbes Field and have him tell me, you know, what he remembered. Bob, he remembered watching Babe Ruth play. He remembered, in fact, Babe Ruth hit his final three home runs on the same day, May 25th, 1935. Ron wrote a column off that game. Numbers 7-12, 7-13, 7-14. He said the players would take streetcars to the games. They would all be drinking at what I think now is the Student Union, used to be the Shenley Hotel, on the front porch there. And you said you remembered the Home Plate Cafe.
Yes.
From there.
Yeah, I like food venues, places that you can get food. I remember them pretty well.
He said that, this is a great move, fans would lug ice-filled garbage cans into Forbes Field. Can you believe that? You fill that baby with beer, Bob?
Well, I was telling you what I remember, too, is how people used to dress at those games. A lot of times the men would show up in complete suits and ties
and
top hats.
Right, exactly. I said, at one point we were walking around, you know, the site over there in Oakland. We were over by where a little bit of the wall is preserved.
Right.
And I said, just close your eyes and try to picture Clemente and then just tell me what comes to your mind. And I remember him smiling. And he said, I have the quote here. He said, I see the basket catches, the throws. Everybody stood on their base when Clemente caught it. Nobody tried to go from second to third, even though he was in right field.
He had, I remember at Three River Stadium, him throwing the ball from the warning track, no bounces to home. Just a line drive I mean, you can't find arms like that. That was incredible. And nobody wanted to test his arm. They shouldn't.
And they just showed part of that as part of the Stargell thing, even.
How about that collision at home plate? Manny Sanguin got run over.
Yes.
Back then, you were allowed to do whatever you had to do to jar the ball loose.
That's one of the dumbest rules in baseball history is this home plate collision thing, isn't it?
Well, now, you know, this year they're extending it to second base. You have to give a runner access to the bag, which means you cannot put a leg or anything anywhere near there.
To me, it's almost more sensible there where a guy's very vulnerable if he's trying to turn a double play where he's like just has one leg planted. But still.
I'm talking about the runner has an advantage now.
Oh, yeah. You know, oh, wait, what do you mean?
At second base. They're. I don't know if they're experimenting with it or if it's in this year. Or if you slide in, the guy who's at, for example, let's say you're picked off of first base. First baseman throws it to the shortstop covering second.
Yeah.
You got to give the runner access to the base. You can, in other words, you can't have a foot.
For your own safety reasons, I guess.
It's all safety predicated. But it just seems to me that that's, you know, it's going a little bit too much again.
Now, Phil Coyne ushered at Steelers games as well since the 1930s. He was at the Immaculate Reception, for God's sakes, Bob. He was there, and he passed away, what, 4 or 5 years ago?
What was he, 101?
Something like that. Yeah, maybe longer than that. I can't remember. He was there for Maz's home run. His job was to work the Yankees dugout. He was working behind the Yankees dugout. He said part of our job was to keep people off the field. We didn't even try. At age 95, you know what his secret was to longevity? 2 Oreos and a glass of milk before bed.
I thought you were going to say 2 Oreos and a fifth of vodka, but whatever. That goes to show you that there is no rule one way or the other about your longevity. It is genetically controlled, and it could be anyone at any time.
I know, but I'm thinking about trying that now that I read it again. 2 Oreos and a glass of milk. I love that idea.
Would you dunk the Oreos?
I might. And that led us into a conversation of what we used to have on The Fan here, and you were a huge part of it, was Legends on The Fan. Or
yes.
Legends of The
Legends
Fan.
Legends for The Fan.
For The Fan.
Yeah.
And one was Dave Parker, and you flew him in, you said?
Yeah, we did. We flew a lot of people in, Mike Tyson included. That was a legendary one. But we had Calipari come in, him, Jay Billis. I'm going to forget people.
Wow.
We had people that we had to fly in, and they wanted to come. You know, we took care of that. And it was just an hour down at Capitol Grill.
I remember it was amazing.
And they sell out all the time. And but it was just good conversations where you're just sitting there BSing.
And what would you do? You would moderate it and have a Q&A?
No Q&A. Just me talking to him, whoever it may be. Yeah, and fans would eat lunch, specialized price lunch, and you get to watch the broadcast.
I think we might have to rekindle that, Bob, and your first guest should be City Limits.
I would love that.
I think that would be wonderful.
I would be completely honored, even though I don't think that I would be worthy.
I think you would be. And I think, Bob...
Plus, you get a nice steak.
You get a nice steak. We should start doing that again. New legends have been born over the last 15 years,
right? Oh, there's
no
question. No question about it.
I think that would be tremendous.
You know, Rick Tocchet was another one.
Jim Leland was one, I bet.
Leland was one. We also had Francona. We had a lot of people.
We have a couple of calls, believe it or not, Bob. I didn't think we were headed in this direction, but here you and I are accidentally watching a Pirates documentary.
Yes, and a weather forecast that I don't like. Oh, no, I do like it. It's 77 on Wednesday. How about that?
Yes, I'm golfing today, hopefully. What was I going to say, Bob? It feels like a bar room.
You said there are people on the phones. That's the last thing you said. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. It feels like you and I are just sitting around on our bar stools right now, which is sort of the feeling that I think would be wonderful to affect on this show, and I think we do, don't you?
It's just sitting around talking sports, and wherever direction it ends up, it ends up.
Did you know Nelson Briles?
Nelly? I know, but I did meet him a few times, yes.
Look at Parker. Was there any more intimidating player in baseball history than Parker in his prime?
I think so. Bob Veal on the mound.
Bob Gibson, you mean?
No, Bob Veal.
Bob Veal? Really?
Well, Bob Gibson's another story, but Bob Veal from the Pirates' point of view?
Yeah.
He's a left-hand pitcher, 6'6", whatever he was. He would wear glasses, and he knew, because he made it known that, you know, sometimes I can't see through these glasses the right way, and he would be deliberately wild.
I like that.
To make you think that, oh my goodness, he's going to come after me. He's wearing his glasses, and they're steamed up.
Effective wildness. I like that.
You remember the Mad Hungarian?
Al Hrabowski.
He had that same vibe where he would glance at you and stare at you. And
so did Goose Gossage, right?
Yeah. The ones who were really intimidating just brought the stuff. You can't intimidate. A lot of people think, grow a beard, you'll be a good closer. No, no, no. You can grow a beard all you want, but you better have 100 mile an hour heat.
And athletes can still be intimidating, by the way. I think even modern. I think Skeens intimidates batters.
There's no question. His confidence comes at you. He's not afraid of anyone. They know it. I'd say another guy who's intimidating to pitch against would be Juan Soto. He stares down people all the time.
Yes,
but he's really good. He's drawn more walks, I think, in his first 5 years in the majors than most everyone in the history of the game.
I think it's harder to be intimidating these days as a pitcher because the batters go up there in a suit of armor. Barry Bonds being the most famous example when he started doing that, right?
Now they all do. They're all wearing stuff to protect themselves.
Limits, do you have a phone call on this?
I have a few. Here is Jim in the North Hills.
Hello, Jim. Say hello to Bob Pompeiani.
Hello, Jim.
Hi, Bob. How are you, Bob?
Doing good. How are you? Go ahead.
I'm good, thank you. Hey, I wanted to chime in on the Forbes Field discussion. I'm an older guy. I'm 74, and I remember my first game there, my dad took me in 55. I was five. I can still remember it vividly. Went to a lot of games over the years. Yeah, I was 10 when they won in 60, 21 when they won in 71, 29 when they won in 79. And I played there in high school in the Whitfield playoffs, which was pretty cool.
That is awesome. Is it your favorite Pittsburgh venue of all time, Forbes Field?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, think about how big that field was. You know, the batting cage, they take BP before the games, and then they would drag it out with a tractor
into center field.
It was in play out there.
Yeah, they'd leave it there for the game. It's unbelievable, Bob.
No,
what's your favorite sporting venue in this town in all the years you've been alive? Your favorite venue?
Well, at first when the Peterson Event Center happened and when they were really willing, I thought that was a cool place to be. I think I still, in my heart, have like an affinity for Civic Arena / Mellon Arena.
Yes.
I just like that
yes.
place for some reason.
I've got a giant framed photo
Park
of that.
Is, you know, I like what appears to be some, you know, old-time baseball setups. You know, Wrigley's that way, Fenway's that way. PNC Park, even though it's newer, it has that vibe to it.
For sure.
So I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm partial to the arena, the Civic Arena, the Igloo. Because I worked there. That was my first real job here, was covering the Penguins as a beat writer. And then, like that gentleman, Three River Stadium, because of an attachment with my dad. We'd come on pilgrimages from Buffalo to see my favorite team, the Pirates, in the 70s.
They were a lot of people's favorite team.
Yeah, we came here right after the Madlock trade and saw him, one of his first games at third base for the Pirates.
That was a great trade for them, and it won them a championship. He had that little, you know, almost half swing, but he was really good at putting the ball in play. And I think, what was he, a four-time batting champion?
Yeah.
I mean, he was terrific.
Limitless Wonder, we've taken up too much of your time, and I apologize for that. We were supposed to do the Express right here. We can still do it if you'd like.
No worries at all. Entirely up to you, because there is some new breaking news from Pitt. Alan Green announces that they've added two executive leadership appointments, Brad Ust, I think that's correct, U-S-T, and Kyle Bruce. So Ust will serve as Senior Deputy Athletic Director for Administration. He will focus on the Panthers' competitive excellence and advancing strategic priorities for the overall department. And Bruce will join the Panthers as a Senior Deputy Athletic Director for External Relations and a Chief Revenue Officer.
Yeah.
Overseeing Pitt's external units and having a strategic focus on revenue generation operations. So here's further trying to buy into NIL
Just call him the money man.
Yeah,
just call him
right.
the money man.
I was just going to say.
His job is to go out and get in your pocket. That's what he's doing.
I was going to say, a lot of big words, fancy words, and job titles there. It boils down to two words. Find money. That's it.
Make money. Bring in money.
Show me the money.
That's it. All right, Limits, why don't we get to that next?
Sure.
With your The Express, we'll take a little trip around the NFL, and then we'll get back to Steeler quarterback drama as we all sit around and wait on Aaron Rodgers. That's what we've been reduced to is waiting around for Aaron Rodgers. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Bob, that was a wonderful trip down memory lane. From your childhood, the game that stands out from any sport that you went to, maybe your dad brought you to a game, is there one that you hold forever? For me, I guess I was still a kid, although I was probably closer to 20. For me, it's Bills 51, Raiders 3 in the AFC title game. That was Buffalo's version of the wild card game here, which was decades of pent-up frustration and rage all let out on the same day.
I like the Steelers beating the Ravens in the AFC Championship game and just how it happened, that big interception by Troy Polamalu.
Oh, yeah.
When I was a kid, though, at Three River Stadium, there was a doubleheader against the Mets, and it was a makeup doubleheader, I believe, and my father, and we had a bunch of people there. But it was fun to watch them win both of those games. They had to. I forget. I think Zane Smith pitched one of them. I'm not sure about the other one. But
The one against the Phillies are you talking
about? No, that's a different one.
Yeah.
I remember one with John Milner hit a grand slam in the bottom of the ninth, I think, or 10th. Do you remember that?
Off Tug McGraw. No. Now I'm getting those mixed up. That was Ed Ott off Tug McGraw. But John Milner hit a big home run.
I think it was a pinch hit grand slam to win a game. I mean, all that stuff. I remember being there when Mike Schmidt hit his 500th. I thought that was cool to watch.
Were you there the night Parker wore a hockey mask?
I don't think I was there for that. I remember that, though.
Legendary stuff.
But even the Penguin stuff is, you know, back in the day when Mario and those guys won those championships, that was awesome to see.
Oh, man.
Especially at that place.
I was working in a parking garage then, Bob. In fact, I was the one taking tickets for people parking for those games at the Chatham Center.
You had a lot of jobs I just discovered.
Yeah.
You've been everywhere.
I fell in love with a fellow. She was working in the parking little thing next to me. And then years later, we actually went on a couple of dates, Bob. It was a miracle. She didn't like me then.
But that was the common bond. You said, hey, I remember you. You were right next to the booth.
Yes. And I used to try to talk to her, and she wanted no part of me then. But then years later, we met at an exercise club and went on a couple of dates. It was a miracle.
Savvy old news hound, Bob. Yeah. Very savvy.
A savvy young news hound. That was about 50 pounds ago.
Or did she remember you?
Good question. I remembered her. She had no recollection. I never even entered her consciousness when we were working together. It's like, you know, get this person away from me. She was always reading a book, I remember.
See, that's what attracted you to her. You know? Reading a book, digging deep.
Sure.
Savvy old news sound. What did a savvy old news houndess? Houndess. What is the word?
The hound was hounding there, Bob.
The hound was hounding. The hound was hounding.
All right. That's enough.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow. A real person.
Yep. I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
How can advertising on TikTok help jumpstart sales for your small business?
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend, get a warehouse, and even hire employees.
My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of The Snacks Lab. We are an exotic snack company. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads, and you gotta start now.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in 1 day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Where's Bob?
Hey, he's out in the hallway talking to someone.
Wish he was in here. Because we're about to take a little detour as we get ready for the Limitless Express. And that is, we're going to head down to Bradenton or perhaps somewhere else in Florida, depending on where the Pirates are, where our friend the Noah Constrictor is on the line. Bob, Noah Hiles from the Post-Gazette. Live from spring training. Hello, Noah.
I bet you has a big tan going on.
He also has a hell of
top
a St.
Top of the morning to you, fellas.
You too. A hell of a St. Patrick's Day outfit on, Bob. And if the monitor worked in here, we could look at it.
Why is that not working?
I don't know.
It's been too long.
Yeah.
How you doing, Noah?
I'm well. I mean, I'm kind of bummed that you guys couldn't see the outfit. I put a lot of effort into it. But now I just kind of feel dumb.
The audience can see it. The audience can see it, Noah.
Yeah,
just those two can't.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
We don't matter.
Well, I'm going to take the sunglasses off because I can't see in these things.
You were just rubbing it in anyway.
Well, let's start there with the rotation and Paul Skenes and him pitching the opener. What do you imagine his first three starts will be? Obviously, he pitches game one. Does he then pitch a game in the second series, and does he catch a game in the opening home series against the Yankees?
I don't think he does. No. I think that...
Whoa!
You know,
what?
Come on. No, we got to change that.
Why? Is the goal to entertain fans in the opening series, or is the goal to pitch your best player against the best pitchers of the opposition? That's what your opening day starter.
If he goes on 4 days, if he goes on 4 days rest, he should be able to pitch Sunday of the Yankees game, of the Yankee series.
Correct. Oh, that's. I just think they're not going to alter his rotation for anything, and they shouldn't, especially this earlier in the year. They shouldn't build in too much rest, and they definitely shouldn't take away days of rest for him just to pitch against a specific opponent in early April. If he's scheduled to start in the Yankees, if it's his turn in the rotation, then yeah, he will. But I don't think they're going to alter things one way or the other just so he can pitch in the first of three games that they play at home. I mean, he will pitch at least once that homestand regardless. I don't know if it'll be in that New York series or not, but I don't
follows?
See them
is
going
it,
out of their way to change it.
Is it St. Louis that follows?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a division team. But it still, it doesn't – I think that if you pitch the opener, and I'm assuming he's going to go five, six – I don't know what he's going to do at that point. I would love to see him against that. And I think because it's the Yankees and they're so infrequently in town and you have a stud like that, I want to see him in that game.
So do I. So do I. That would mean someone else has to alter their schedule. So what? You know, someone else will have to skip a start. As long as he goes on 4 days rest, though, Noah, he should be good to go in that Sunday game.
Then he'll pitch that Sunday game. If he stays on his normal, they're going to stick to their rotation. And everyone's going to pitch on the fifth day. So if that goes according to plan, then he will pitch then. The way I drew it up, I thought he would have missed the Yankee series. But maybe I was wrong on how I looked at it, because they play 4 in Miami, 3 in Tampa, and then there's the off day. I don't know how it would work, but I just can tell you they're not going to change anything for anyone to give Skeens a special opportunity to pitch against the Yankees, and nor should they. You can't be altering start dates just to appease fans for certain matchups. The goal should be to win, and you win by sticking to the plan that you make in spring training.
All right, let me ask you about first base, because that's still seemingly unsettled. We saw that Hall hit another home run yesterday, came in the ninth inning, a 2-run home run. Is he the guy that at this point is the leading candidate to be there? And what about Henry Davis? How does he figure in on this?
At first base?
No, just on the roster. Two separate questions. Sorry.
Okay. So, sorry. I think DJ Stewart's still the leader at first base. Derek Hall's swung a better bat as of late. But a lot of those hits have come against guys who are going to be pitching in the minor leagues. And Derek Hall has hit minor league pitching really well throughout his career. He just hasn't really hit big league pitching as well. DJ Stewart's been the guy who I think has got the most looks at first base as far as players that we didn't expect to see playing first base when we arrived down here in Bradenton. He's had the most consistent spring at the plate. Out of anybody who's in that first base competition, he swings from the left side, which is where Horwitz swings from. So it's kind of, you're replacing a lefty with a lefty. And he's done it before. I mean, he's got 7 years of big league experience. He's 2 years removed from an .850 OPS season with the Mets. First base is a newer position for him defensively, but they've got a gold glove utility guy behind him that they can put in as a defensive replacement in the late inning. So I expect Stewart to be the starter there. As far as Henry Davis is concerned, I think he makes the opening day roster as the second catcher. He's probably the most well-rounded catcher right now in this organization. His defense has come a long way. The bat has the potential. We haven't seen it at the major league level yet, but when you look at the guys competing for the job, Rodriguez has swung a good bat, but I think they want to start him in AAA just because he missed all of last season. And DeLay hasn't been as good as Davis or Rodriguez, so he shouldn't make the opening day roster. I think it's Joey Bart, and I think it's Henry Davis as the two catchers.
Wow. All right, what's the opening rotation, and how soon do we see Bubba Chandler?
It's going to be a minute for Bubba, just because I think they're happy with what they have at the major league level right now. Paul's obviously day one. I think they're going to break up the lefties. Derek Shelton talked about that earlier this month on how that's their intention. So, and this isn't going off of anything I'm told, but if you're going to break up the left-handers, I would have to imagine it would be Heaney as the number two, Keller as the three, Falter as the four, and then Jones as the five, or maybe Jones as the three and Keller as the five. But they're going to go righty-lefty there rather than just putting your five arms in order by merit. I think they want to break it up righty-lefty. You can put both of those left-handers are soft tossers, so you can pair them behind high-velocity righties. So it's going to be an interesting way they draw it up.
Well, whether or not that works or not, as far as Chandler is concerned, he seems very confident. I saw an interview in which Skeens said, well, he texted me and said, good, you have the starting day job this year because next year it'll be mine. Something of that nature. He seems very confident in his abilities. I mean, is there an expectation that when he does get up here, I mean, he can bump one of these lefties out of the rotation, or does it give him some flexibility to make some moves potentially? What do you think would happen with him?
I mean, the funny thing about baseball is more often than not, these things kind of work themselves out. You know, an injury will happen or a guy will not have a good season and make the choice easy for the manager. That's what happens most of the time. I'm sure Derek Shelton would love to have a hard decision in May or June. If Chandler's dominating AAA and all five of his starters are pitching well. He would love to have the dilemma of, all right, well, how do we make the best use out of everyone? But I think if that situation were to arise, you look at it where, I mean, a guy like Bailey Falter pitched a career high in innings last year, and he took a significant jump up in innings. And typically after that happens, you have to be very mindful of that guy's workload. And so maybe Bailey Falter's a guy who could rotate between the rotation and the bullpen this year. And if that's the case, then that creates an opening for Bubba Chandler. I don't think he's going to need a ton of time in AAA, Chandler being the guy I'm talking about. His stuff is big league ready. It's just getting a couple more reps. He didn't spend a ton of time in Indy last year. But once he's ready, they need to bring him up here because he is a true asset. I think he has the capabilities of being every bit of electric as Jared Jones was last year, if not better. I'm not going to put him in the Skeens category because I don't think you can really put anyone in that category right now, but he's not far behind. He's an immense talent.
Noah Hiles of the Post-Gazette on the fan hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. 50-minute mark on the fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19, Peters Township. We're talking to Noah Hiles, affectionately known as the Noah Constrictor. All right, so they're facing a righty in Game 1 in Miami. You give me what you think the batting order will be with positions that day, Constrictor.
Man, a righty. Even though they're facing a righty, I'm still going to have Tommy Pham batting leadoff and playing left field.
Okay.
And I have Reynolds in right, Cruz in center, Kutch at DH, Bart behind the plate. We'll say Gonzalez at second, Hayes at third, Stewart at first, and IKF at shortstop.
Dear God. How is Hayes doing?
He returned to action. Would that have been Saturday? So, he wasn't too concerned with that left side tightness. It's not something like the back where I think we're going to have to monitor it throughout the entire season. It was just a little bump along the road here, and the Pirates were probably rather conservative with how they dealt with it. He said he could have been back days prior to when he returned. When we've seen him on the field, I think he's looked solid. His at-bats have been really good. He hasn't had an extra base hit, but he hasn't played in a while, so that might be part of it. I think his new swing will help him get more contact in the zone, the two-handed finish. He's not going to be chasing as much, not going to be reaching as much. And this is a guy who I know everyone wants to see what we saw from him in 2020 and in the back end of 2023 with the extra pop and everything. But if this guy can just even be a league average hitter, he's a difference maker for what he can do defensively. This is a 3-4 war player if he can stay healthy and just hit league average because what he can do with his glove. I think he can be a consistent 260, 270 hitter this year if he stays healthy with the swing changes he's made. But that if is something that I don't feel confident in until I see it happen. We've got to see how that back holds up after spring training, how it holds up in April, May, once we get to the mid-season, and June and July. Can he still be a semblance of the player that we thought he could be when he signed that extension?
No, I want to ask you about pitching again, going back to that starting pitching specifically. Yeah. Joe and I were talking about pitch counts and how they apply to just about every pitcher. Although this year I'm thinking that if Paul Skeens determines that he wants to continue in a game, you know, it's the eighth inning, it's 1-0 or 1-1 or whatever the case, and he is really dealing, does Derek Shelton allow him to go where maybe no pitcher around here has gone before? It's so predicated on how, you know, going to the sixth inning reliever, the seventh, eighth, ninth, and generally, you know, that sort of approach. But what is his expectation about innings pitched and pitch count in specific games?
Well, he said in January at Pirate Fest he wanted to build himself up to pitch 240 innings. I don't think he comes close to 240 innings, but I think that is a realistic expectation for himself. I think he has the body to handle that type of workload. I don't know if he'll get to that, but I wouldn't be shocked if he gets to 200. As far as pitch count is concerned, I think with Skeens, they're going to look less at the pitch count and more at the biometric stuff, those analytics where they're going to look to see how his pitches are spinning the second and third time through the order. Where is his velocity sitting at? And if that's taking a dip, that shows fatigue more than his pitch count will, because we've seen him reach triple digits and pitch 100 before. But if the ball has a little bit less spin to it, if he's missing his spots, that I think for a guy like Paul shows a better indication of fatigue, and that will be used to determine if he stays in a game in the late innings more than pitch count. So, and sometimes they might coincide. That it might happen that his stuff starts to dip after 105, 110 pitches, and I don't expect him to ever throw more than like 130 in a game. But I think that because of his role on this team and his just overall strength as a human being, Paul will have a little bit longer of a leash than most guys in this modern era of baseball.
Noah, it's been a little bit of an adventure for David Bednar this spring, has allowed 9 earned runs in 6 games. What do you make of his progression, and ultimately, is his spot as the closer still safe?
He's not the closer. I asked Derek Shelton this yesterday, and Derek Shelton said this team doesn't have a closer right now. I wrote about it yesterday. And it's something where I don't think that's a jab at Bednar. It's just something that the Pirates have been consistent with all spring. They said they don't have a closer right now. Now, that could change sometime this week as they finalize the opening day roster and pick someone to hold that role. But they haven't dedicated it to anyone. And Bednar obviously falls into that. Now,
wow. Hold on a second. This led off a notebook, I think, which is the reason I missed it. Everything that I've seen, even I think from Shelty, since the end of last year, indicated that yes, this is absolutely our guy. I mean, this is big news.
It's the second time he said it this spring. He said it to a national podcast early down here. But I thought at that time it was more, hey, we just want everyone to compete for that leverage spot. I decided to ask him yesterday because, you know, this is the last full week of spring training, and I wanted to see if they had made a decision, if Bednar is their traditional closer, or if they're going to pick someone else for that role, or if they're not going to go with anyone. And as of right now, they have not named anyone their true closer right now. I don't know if that's a slight against Bednar and what he's done this spring, or more that maybe they're just going with a change in strategy with the coaching hires they've made this offseason. They're going to go with matchup-based bullpenning.
Who are the other candidates?
I would have to say Dennis Santana would be a lead guy. He's only allowed one hit this spring. He's looked really good.
And he was good last year, too, at the end.
Yeah, he was really good. This is a guy that the org is very high on. Since he's arrived, he's really taken off through the guidance of this pitching group here in Pittsburgh. Kyle Nicklaus has had a really good spring. He's thrown 8 shutout innings. Those two I would look at. Maybe Lawrence is the guy they brought in from Colorado on a waiver claim. He's had 2 really good outings. I don't expect him to get instant opportunity there, but he has experienced closing ball games before. Colin Holderman could be another guy that I could see pitching in the 9th inning. But they've got a lot of candidates. I mean, I don't know who's going to make the team as far as the bullpen is concerned. They've got probably 13 guys competing for these 9 spots, and I don't know who they're going to go to.
Noah, we appreciate the time, man. I know you're busy. Great coverage. And now we have a little topic here with Bednar. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Noah.
Absolutely. Take it easy, guys.
There he goes, the Noah Constrictor.
Isn't that like saying if you have 3 quarterbacks, you really don't have one? When you have a bullpen with a bunch of guys, but you really don't have one?
I mean, he said whether that's a slight on Bednar and his work in spring training, that is absolutely a slight to Bednar. It's a comment on Bednar's season, maybe his spring training. But man, for Shelty to say out loud, I don't think we have that right now. I think right now we'll go and kind of figure out what we're going to do from there. That's pretty big, that Bednar is no longer the designated closer. It doesn't mean he won't be the guy when the season starts, but there's no public backing from the organization. Bob, that's big.
Yeah, it is big, because that's what he got his arbitration case, or the money he got with that in mind. But hey, if I'm glad at least they're saying whatever you're doing is not good enough, and his spring has not been good. So if that matters to them, and it should, because that's what you're judging him on, based on a season that I don't think was as good as his previous one, then you have to make necessary changes. That doesn't mean he won't emerge as the or won't end up getting back to that role. That means for now they're just looking at other guys. I will say that about Santana. He's been really good, especially this spring. But at the end of last year, he was really good too. Every time they called on him, he did some pretty good stuff in there.
Man, I don't feel good about any of this.
Closers, though, emerge out of nowhere sometimes, Joe, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Guys you never think are going to be closers.
I'm not talking about that. I should have mentioned in my mind, I'm looking at the lineup right now. I don't feel good about this, Bob. Tommy Pham is your leadoff
hitter. Tommy Pham would not be on my team, honestly.
Kutch,
I mean, he is what he is, but he's a journeyman who's looking for work just year after year.
Yeah. Kutch as your cleanup hitter? And then you finish with Hayes, Stewart, and IKF. What do you think of that lineup?
I don't like that lineup. I think they should have done and spent more money in the offseason. They had every opportunity to do it. They have a pitching staff they think is going to be good as starters. They should have spent another $30 million on two players.
Even one guy. I know I always go to Jock Peterson because, and I'm not saying he's Barry Bonds, but he's a slugger, a bona fide slugger you put in the middle of your lineup, and then things start to look a little bit differently. And come on. What are we doing here with Tommy Pham in left field?
I don't know.
You go Reynolds, Cruz,
and all due respect to McCutchen, him as your cleanup hitter tells you that they have weaknesses throughout their batting lineup.
Oh, my God, yes. They have weaknesses at the top, in the middle, and at the bottom. Other than that, they're real solid. What do you make of this? Limits.
Well, I mean, I am concerned about the bullpen. The rotation is the only thing that I feel pretty decent about. The bottom three of this order, guys, you know how we always harp on how the bottom six of the Penguins has been an issue for however many years? The bottom of this lineup is going to be, I think, a problem, especially if Brian Hayes gets hurt again.
What about the top with Tommy Pham? As a leadoff hitter?
I like Pham, but not as a leadoff hitter.
What do you like about Pham? I'd be curious to know. What do you like about him?
Well, what I was going to go to was he's a good contact hitter, puts the ball in play and can hit gaps, but last year he was not very good being able to do that.
He's 37 years old.
I would have preferred Peterson too.
His on-base percentage in Kansas City was .228. That's your leadoff hitter.
I would have been okay seeing another year of Brian De La Cruz, and I'm not as confident in this bullpen.
You're reaching for Brian De La Cruz, we know we're desperate here.
Yeah.
He played most of his games with the White Sox last year. He had .266 batting average. He actually had a decent on base for them at .330.
But Henry Davis, that was the other thing that he said. He believes he'll make the team as a second catcher. Good for that. Actually, what they need Henry Davis to turn into is a 30 home run guy they could slot as a designated hitter, cleanup hitter. That's what they'd like to see.
What happens to the human rain delay? Jason Delay. What happens to Endy?
He's going down to the minors, apparently. I want to see Henry Davis do well. They need him to do well.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knix Menswear, your friend in style.
I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
We host the true crime podcast, Psychopedia.
Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.